We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's your True Faith Newcastle United podcast. I'm Charlotte Robson, joined today by Alex Hirst and special guest George Culkin, to talk you through what is a very exciting week for Newcastle fans, and we hope fans of football in general. It is the run-up to Sir Bobby Robson's, what would have been Sir Bobby Robson's 90th birthday, and there is a lot planned around the club. George, do you want to talk us through a little bit about Bobby 90?
Thank you, yeah. Bobby 90, well, so I love that idea, firstly. There's an apostrophe there. Bobby apostrophe 90. I can't tell you how much I love that apostrophe because it echoes Italia 90, and obviously Bobby was England manager back then, and you know that incredible tournament that changed the face of football in this country, Gasser's tears, all the rest of it. And yeah, so Bobby 90. And the other thing I love about it is that it's a collaboration between some incredibly lovely and talented people who I'm with at the moment.
He means us.
I do. And really, yeah, what I wanted to do was find a way that was different to celebrate what would have been his 90th birthday, make it spectacular and gorgeous and interesting. And actually, the idea came about, the original idea was to maybe try and put a gig on, a musical event. And that didn't work out for various reasons. But yeah, this lives on. And so I'm very, very proud to say it's a collaboration between The Athletic, True Faith, War Flags. We'll see more of that at the weekend. I'm incredibly excited about that. Can't wait for you all to see it. And yeah, so there's lots of strings to it. And of course, you know, ultimately we want to amplify and highlight the great work of the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, which does brilliant work here in the Northeast. Through the NHS to raise funds for anti-cancer projects. But yeah, that's the idea. The starting point of it was the fact that I wrote or helped Bobby write his last book, which was about Newcastle, the club and the city. Very, very kind of emotional and difficult project back then because Bobby was, you know, Bobby wasn't well. But I love being part of it. I've kept all those recordings, never listened back to it because it felt too personal and kind of painful, but I thought how amazing would it be to you know, to listen again and possibly publish them. Spoke to Bobby's family, got the go ahead, and so yeah, so the Bobby 90 effectively kind of starts out with this podcast series which you can listen to via The Athletic, and it's Bobby's voice really narrating his own life story. It's very emotional. I know you're going to play some clips of that a bit later. Really, really excited. Yeah, and so that's how it started. But written pieces on The Athletic, the thing that really I guess we're mostly going to talk about tonight, and I'm so grateful to the pair of you. Alex, you've written something very special, but Charlotte has edited a special fanzine, which is going to go on sale.
It will be on sale by the time you're listening to this.
Great.
Link in the description.
Link in the description.
It'll be on sale by the time I finish this sentence, probably. Yeah. And Charlotte, I'm so grateful to you. Charlotte, you've done an amazing job. And I don't say this lightly, but I know that Bobby would be really, really proud and very happy. And so thank you for everything you've done. And now let's talk about it.
Sort of feels like that's the end, doesn't it? Like, you are welcome, full stop, the end of the podcast. But no, we've got plenty more to chat about. Thank you, George, for giving a bit of an explanation there about what the project is, what's involved, and what people can look forward to this weekend against Liverpool. Yeah, we are going to talk a bit more about the fanzine, because the fanzine's been a real education for me. I knew about Bobby's life, of course, from reading autobiographies and all sorts of, you know, you absorb snippets being a Newcastle fan of all kinds of parts of his life. But what we wanted to do with the fanzine was sort of get a good view of his life. You know, we don't have anything in there about Bobby the player, but we've got tons of Bobby the manager, not just at Newcastle, but at Ipswich, at PSV, at Barcelona, and what he meant to kind of these different factions of fans. And we'll talk a little bit like that, about that in the second half of the show. But Alex wrote a really great piece that I think is a good sort of jump off point for some discussion around this. Alex, do you want to talk us through your piece? It is Sir Bobby Robson Made Newcastle United is the title of it.
It's a massive club.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic football club. I mean, Saturday afternoon, you roll out there, you look around, you think, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, hope we win today for this lot.
Yeah.
Magnificent club.
Yeah, and it's a really nice opportunity, isn't it, to celebrate Sir Bobby Robson, not just because it, you know, this week would have been his 90th birthday, but also because the club once again resembles the kind of club that he left us as fans and the people that took over after him. And Charlotte and I are the same age, George. Shock you there. Charlotte looks much younger. But, you know, fans of our generation, kind of mid-30s, late-20s, who missed out on the Kevin Keegan era, or at least missed out on witnessing it, remembering it, feeling it. So Bobby Robson was kind of the first reference point that we had to Newcastle United, and the only reference point we've had to Newcastle United not being absolutely fucking mental. and to be fair, and you know this much more, George, and I'm sure you could tell some stories or have done. It was mental when he was here as well. It wasn't it wasn't like this kind of serene, well-run, beautiful football club. But the key thing for me, the thing that I wanted to write about was how important his little spell was, and what's so nice, by the way, about Bobby 90 and the whole relationship that people of the Northeast, but in particular Newcastle United fans, have about Bobby Robson is, once again, he didn't win anything. Yeah, there was some nice European nights and there were some good wins, but he didn't win anything. He wasn't here that long, really. Kind of long spell now for a Premier League manager in this era, but back then it wasn't particularly long. You know, this wasn't Ferguson at Man United. It wasn't all of these guys who were at clubs for years. It was just a really kind of special 4 to 5 year period where a lot went right, and that 4 to 5 year period is probably really important to a lot of people in defining what Newcastle United actually was supposed to be, what it was supposed to look like, because he inherited a mess. Mm-hmm. He inherited a squad built by three previous managers going back to Kevin Keegan, a team bottom of the league that hadn't won all season, and with 18 months Newcastle one of the best sides in the Premier League, and beyond that one of the best sides in Europe. And
so many parallels, aren't there? Yeah. The listening will be.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that I really wanted to get across, and I'm interested to hear your view on as well, of course, both of you, is how that version of Newcastle United just became the benchmark that we all thought back to. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the Keegan era, which was a miracle. I don't think any Newcastle United fan, or certainly no one I know, during the dark days of Mike Ashley, whether that's in the noughties or the 2010s or whenever it was, thought this club should be like that. It should be Alan Shearer, it should be Sir Les Ferdinand, it should be top of the league by 15 points. I think Newcastle fans generally know that was a right man, right time, everything in the universe combined to create this beautiful thing. What you got from Sir Bobby Robson and his side was just a real hard work, kind of basic talent from him, from the leaders that he inherited, but also extended their careers, Shay Given, Gary Speed, Alan Shearer being the key ones, but there were others as well. And it's just what Newcastle United is. Even now, I look back to his side and his tenure at the club, that is Newcastle United for me, more than the sum of its parts, hardworking, honest, trustworthy. And by that, I mean, if we were shit, Bobby Robson would come out in an interview. Very few managers. Eddie Howe doesn't really do it now.
Yeah.
Newcastle were rubbish on Saturday at Bournemouth. Realistically, they were rubbish. But Eddie Howe, for reasons I understand why, he comes out, he protects the place. He didn't get that from Sir Bobby Robson. He would just say how it was, and fans appreciated that. And there was a real kind of just like hard, nasty, bastard side to his team without crossing a line. They were hard to play against. It was never an easy game against Bobby Robson's Newcastle United. And this is a guy who hardly spent any money. Yeah. There was two of the seasons he was here, he actually made a profit in the transfer firm market. The other two seasons, he managed to spend very well and very wisely, and they spent some money. But in terms of, you know, Newcastle, I think his total highest net transfer spend in a single season was 0102 when he spent 30 million quid. Even this was an era when Man United was signing players for £30 million in one player. So to rub shoulders with the kind of teams that we did for a long time was absolutely because of his genius and his ability. And it kind of went unspoken about. It even to this day, people associate Newcastle being good under some Bobby Robson. I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves for what he actually did. So that was the motivation anyway, Charlotte, for my piece.
Well, thank you. Thank you for talking us through it. It is a wonderful piece. It is in the fanzine. Please do consider buying one. All proceeds go to the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation. And this isn't just a promo piece, I promise, for the fanzine, although I have
We do need you to buy it. Yeah. I mean, we do want you to buy
it. A lot of my time on it. I'm really grateful if you could buy a copy. It is a collector's edition. It's a really beautiful piece of art, if nothing else. But it also contains great writing. Thank you, Alex.
And they, you know, they're good. They, you know, they wear the heart on the sleeve, don't they?
Yeah.
They love the club. They appear come rain, shine, blow or snow, don't they?
Yeah.
And they're just magnificent people that you work for. You just hope you can get them some great results to give them a great weekend.
Yeah.
And they love the club.
Yeah.
There's a passion here that is not very seen in many other clubs, is it?
I think it's really interesting what you're saying about sort of this some more than the sum of its parts, because the parallels that we've got now and the youth that are supporting Newcastle now are probably getting that similar sort of feeling that we got when Sir Bobby was in charge. But George, I know you were very keen to jump in there, so let me bring you in.
Yeah, so I mean, I've done a podcast with Mark about sort of 92-93 and the parallel that I kind of feel between now and then. You know, that idea of Newcastle being taken over, being dragged up from the bottom of, albeit a different league, and, you know, with a new manager and new players and this feeling of lightheadedness and excitement around the club. I do think that parallel is there. I hadn't quite thought about it in the Bobby way, except that I read your piece, and then I've done something for The Athletic as well. And what I wanted to kind of write about was that sense of Bobby's, not just legacy, but how he still lingers at the club and what relevance he has. And I asked that very, you know, that very point you made. He was there for 5 years, didn't win anything. So why is there a statue? Why is his face absolutely all the way around the stadium? Why are his quotes there? Now, part of that is because of what happened towards the end of his life and setting up the foundation. There is that sense of him being more than a manager, and that's true. But the interesting thing I thought was I spoke to people like Steve Harper, who's now you know, head of the academy, to Schola, who is the loan manager, to Neil Stoker, who's on the kit staff and who Bobby Robson gave a full-time job to. And they all made the parallel between now and then. And there were two things based around that. It was the fact that Bobby brought unity back to the club. And, you know, for some of us, that did come quite soon after Keegan. So we'd seen that. We'd seen Newcastle in Europe. We'd seen Newcastle challenging. But the club, you forget how much the club was riven when he took over. It was a civil war in the dressing room. Alan Shearer was about to leave. If Hullett had stayed on, Shearer would have left. No doubt about that. He says that himself. The club was split Rob Lee out of the team. And there was no money. All the money had gone. And he came in and, yeah, so he brought this very, very powerful unity back to the club, unified from top to bottom. Suddenly you had, you know, all those little chain of command working again, and you had the fan base back on board. How did he do it? Hard work. Not money, hard work. Now, Eddie Howe has had money, and so it's happened quicker, but the most powerful thing about it is that sense of unity. Now, Schola talks about this. Howe is on the training ground. He wants to be on the pitch. He wants to be with the players. That's Bobby. That's Bobby all over. And, you know, that sense of wanting to develop players. What's the story being post-takeover? Ignore the money. The money is not irrelevant, but ignore it. Eddie Howe has made players better. That was what Bobby loved. He wanted to make players better. At Ipswich, he developed a youth team, you know, didn't spend money on players, bought a handful of players. And that was what it was all about. And so those parallels, are very, very strong. And I was so chuffed to hear. I mean, so his legacy lives on in the through people, but it's that, you know, the really powerful thing about what's happening now is that it's the first time it's been like this since Bobby. And fingers crossed, we're not too far away from Europe again and those other special memories.
Yeah, you don't have to cross your fingers. It's a cert. It's a cert. We're definitely not far away from Europe. It's all very exciting. It is. It's just a lush time to be a fan of the club. And it does hark back to those happy memories. I think unity is the really important piece there for me. And is sort of what we'll talk about in the second half of the show. We will take a break now. It feels like a good time. You will hear some messages from our sponsors. If you don't want to, we are on Patreon. It's £3 to £8 a month for loads of extra Newcastle United content. You will also have heard and will continue to hear little excerpts, which The Athletic have been so kind to let us use, of Sir Bobby speaking. It's just such a special thing for us to be able to put those into the podcast. So thank you, George, and thank you to The Athletic for those. We will be back after these messages.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Part two of the show, and unity is mentioned there. Hard work and unity. Hard work. The fanzine has been very hard work, but the thing about it that I like, that the thing about that has struck me so much, and I keep trying to articulate it, is how Sir Bobby Robson sort of transcends any kind of geographical barrier. You know, we have a bitter rivalry. Well, can you call it a rivalry anymore? With Sunderland. Typically, we would never work with a Sunderland fanzine. But when I reached out to somebody from A Love Supreme, it was a yes. Of course we'll write something about Sir Bobby. So it's so important to the region, so important. I'm so honoured that you've asked me. I got that a couple of times. So honoured that you've asked me to write something for this. And they've written something about when Bobby was Porto manager and brought Gordon Armstrong over for...
the other way around.
I might edit that. They've written something about bringing Porto over for Gordon Armstrong's testimonial. I asked somebody from Fly Me to the Moon, a Borough fanzine, another immediate yes. This person, Rob, he's done loads of work for the foundation and raising money. And I suppose being a myopic Newcastle United fan, I thought... I'd never really actually given any thought to the way that Sir Bobby sort of transcends this just Newcastle thing. It's not. It's the whole of the Northeast. Somebody wrote something for Ipswich. Alex wants to come in. Go on.
I was going to come in after you. Sorry to interrupt. But
I thought you needed my attention.
No, sorry. I just wanted to say, to develop that point a little bit, there are two interesting things for me. Number one, Bobby Robson finished his managerial career. And a lot of his peers and even understudies at the time, in terms of the way they conducted themselves with other managers and other football clubs, could not have been more different. If you look at Arsene Wenger v Alex Ferguson, could you imagine Bobby Robson letting one of his teams go on like that or show such indiscipline on and off the pitch? Jose Mourinho versus everyone. These were people that looked up to Bobby Robson, but George knows him, you know, better than anyone, I suppose, certainly in this room. There's just a kind of class about the guy that he never let emotion get the better of himself in those professional contexts. And in terms of those rivalries with those football clubs, he never crossed the line talking about Sunderland and Middlesbrough. I seem to remember, and I was young at the time, whenever we played one of these teams, he talked them up. He talked up their area. He talked up the Northeast, their fan base, how passionate they were. You have to be genuine to get away with it. You can't bullshit your way through stuff like that. Both sets of fans have to know that you mean what you say and you have the experience to back that up. And I think when we, just from a Newcastle perspective, when we played those teams, he was buzzing when we beat Sunderland, particularly at the stadium. Like, there's a famous post-match interview clip where the away fans are kept in the ground and he can't keep the smile off his face. So it wasn't a lack of desire to beat these teams, but there was a deep-rooted respect that came from when we played them, not just about them as football clubs, but about the people that supported them. And, you know, from my perspective, and I have less perspective than maybe you, George, or other people, that's what appeals so much to those fan bases, that they knew that that respect was real and based on his kind of experience growing up in this region.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a few. Yeah, I mean, he came from a split village in County Durham. He's a County Durham man. He's not a Geordie. I think that played a big part of it. But I think because of what happened with England, he had 8 years with England. That belonged to everybody, you know, particularly by the end. It was so powerful, so emotive. He was a fierce Newcastle United fan, but, you know, his early background in management, he had a chairman at Ipswich, John Cobbold, who would say to him if they lost, he said, "Bobby, it wasn't our turn to lose today. And by losing, we've given the other team the enjoyment of winning." I mean, he would tell that story as if Cobbold was mad, but that stayed with him. I mean, that sense stayed with him. And I vividly recall him being angry with Wenger for the way he responded to bad results. You've got to learn how to lose. And I think, you know, by that point of his career towards the end, you know, it is about it. You know you're going to lose sometimes. You can't win every game. And it's just about, you know, being a good person is about how you respond to those kind of moments. And it is fascinating. And, you know, doing the fanzine and being involved in the fanzine has brought that very sharp reminder about how he belonged to everybody. And Sunderland fans sang his name when he died.
Yeah, I was going to say that's in the Sunderland piece. It opens with "There's only one Bobby Robson, 2009." Load of Sunderland fans singing that. Was it the day after?
It was the next friend. You know, I think it was. Yeah, and the other thing, Bobby talks about this in the recordings. He talks about going to watch Sunderland play after he'd left as Newcastle manager. Loved going to watch Sunderland. Loved going to watch Middlesbrough as well as Newcastle. And he talks about Sunderland fans coming up to him and shoving £20 notes, £10 notes into his pocket for the foundation. But it's extraordinary to have somebody like that who not only straddled the divide in the northeast, which is a very difficult thing to do, if not impossible, but how he like belongs to everybody. It's very, very powerful, that.
I mean, I bought Ronaldo when Ronaldo was just on the way up. And then, of course, we went like that.
Yeah,
Alan was already there.
Yeah.
We were buying guarantee.
Yeah.
With Alan.
Yeah.
With Ronaldo, we were buying potential. Which was materialised, of course, but yeah. Alan was there, and the fella could see that.
And there's a piece in there as well about sort of sharing. It's all about sharing, isn't it? This we all feel that we have Bobby. He's shared with us. His son Mark has written a piece in the fanzine as well about sharing his dad, about how his dad belonged to everybody. And it's just so emotional. It's such a it's so generous as well. Firstly of Mark, but also of Bobby to be shared in that way and not let it show on his face that's annoying, or not let it, you know, show in the way that he speaks at press conferences or spoke at press conferences. It's been such a special thing to kind of be involved in and see that side of it.
But the other thing, again, looking, you know, there's a great piece from Yusuf in it about Vancouver Royals. I mean, that was the very start of his managerial career. It wasn't the best of starts, but already at that very early point in his managerial career, he had that inquisitiveness, that curiosity, went abroad and did that. And Yusuf's piece is fantastic. But it's that breadth of his life and his career. The way I describe it, he had a life of many lives. I mean, he started work. His work was as an apprentice electrician in a coal mine, and he then had a full career as a player. Charlotte mentioned that. We don't talk about that anymore. It was something like 600 appearances, senior appearances, 20 England caps. Nobody talks about that. And then what he did at Ipswich, 13 years at Ipswich, that's a story in itself. Rebuilding that club from top to bottom, doing absolutely everything there, from signing players, coaching players, having the casting vote on whether they built a new stand, for God's sake. And, you know, to buying the toilet paper, as he put it. And then 8 years at England, there you go. And then still what he did in Europe as a manager is, you know, others have gone there and given it a go. Nobody has done what he did at the size of clubs clubs that he did. Never bought an English player, had a nibble for Alan Shearer, never bought an English player, and never had an English coach with him. I mean, it's astonishing, you know. And you know, the Newcastle side of it coming home is a book in itself. But he did so much, and you know, he did so much. It's unparalleled.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just that, you know, I think there's that famous story when he took over at Newcastle and played Chelsea away, I believe was the first game, and he went into the dressing room, and George, you might want to tell it better here than I, so tell me if I'm misphrasing him here, but I think he, either the first meeting or in the dressing room, he just looked at the players, looked around the dressing room and said, you know, you lot probably think there's some quite good players in here. But let me promise you, I have managed better players than every single one of you in my career. And then he said something probably, which, you know, not to be broadcast type of thing. But I just, that is, you could, again, I come back to being genuine. People might think this is a strange thing, but there's so many bullshitters in football.
Yeah.
At the top level, managers as well. I mean, look at the Southampton manager who's just been sacked. And the things he said, he can't get away with that because he hasn't been there and done it. Bobby Robson had been to Barcelona, one of the biggest clubs in the world, won silverware. He'd been across Europe, done England. When he came to Newcastle United, big job. But he'd had bigger jobs. And that was, I think, really important in bringing about the unity that you talked about before, and that Scholler and Steve Harper and stuff talk about. Like, you've got to have walked the walk to do that, and he did it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another nice little lesson in that he had this toughness about him. He was absolutely a tough man. I mean, I'm incredibly sentimental, and I'm very sentimental about him and his memory, but he was a tough old bugger. He really was. You know, the first thing he did at Ipswich, he had a fist fight with two senior players when he got there, because they weren't doing what he wanted them to do, and they were rebelling against his authority. He had different era now, but he took them on physically. And, you know, he had to do that. And again, it's important to remember this. He was tough. You don't get to where you are, don't get to where he was without having sharp elbows and without, you know, being able to impose himself. And he did. I think what people respected about him was his honesty, and it was that humanity. And so, you know, there's lots of kind of famous funny stories, but you know, Steve Harper would say this, you know, he's out of the team, Shea Givens kicked on, he hasn't, wants to go out on loan, full of fury, goes to see Bobby in his office, determined to go out on loan, and 5 minutes later he's coming out, feeling 10 foot tall, definitely wasn't going on loan anywhere. And then it's like, how's that just happened? I just do not understand how that's happened. He had this quality that made people feel better than themselves, but also he had that, he knew what sacrifice meant, and he knew that you had to sacrifice for the greater good. And I think that he carried that about him.
Mark definitely touches on that, doesn't he, in his piece. I mean, as the son of Sir Bobby Robson, he was part of those sacrifices, right? Your dad's not there for big holidays, Christmas.
Never had a conversation with him about football.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's really interesting. And yeah, there hasn't been anybody like it, has there? Let's talk a little bit about Bobby taking Newcastle into Europe and how that might have affected Newcastle fans and players for today. Alex, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. And this is the thing that I referred to before about him making Newcastle United, both united but also incredibly well respected. You know, Newcastle had been in the Champions League before, it didn't go very well. This, you know, this time it was different, not only to take Newcastle into a Champions League second group stage as it was then, he took Newcastle into a European semi-final. I just wouldn't underestimate that very small period had on the club's appeal to players, to fans, to broadcasters. Like, we owe him and Keegan, but we're talking about Robson, so much for that period. And, you know, I spoke to someone from Newcastle United recently who, when the club went across to America, they said that the met a guy who had driven 9 hours to go to a fan zone thing and meet Shearer and Steve Harper, I think, was there. And the reason they support Newcastle United is because they'd seen Goal, the movie. The only reason that those Hollywood film producers filmed Goal at Newcastle United is because it was Sir Bobby Robson's Newcastle United, who were very good, had the fanatical fan base, and were, at the time, I'm sure, when they signed the contract, were a team on the up, full of world-class individuals. Mm-hmm. All of that is because of Sir Bobby Robson. It does not happen unless that man, who was still managing and still working professionally, but he didn't have to take the Newcastle job. It was an absolute basket case, like George has said. It would have been easier to say no and ensure that reputation that he had as a great manager, and he took that job. And I just think, like, I keep coming back to it, everything that we think Newcastle United should be, the level that the club should aspire to, comes from him, no one else.
And that's an interesting thing as well, actually. That's put me in mind of something else that he says in the recording. There's a kind of lovely moment where he's talking, and obviously this is very much during the Ashley era, not too far into it, but he's basically saying, well, it's all there. If you get the right manager and you get the right owner, it's all there. You know, it's all there. And Newcastle should be in the top four every season. That's what he thought of Newcastle. That's how he thought Newcastle should be. And that sort of level of ambition and aspiration is important, because that's, you know, that was drummed out of us for a long, long time. And, you know, I think partly, you think that, but, you know, he was there. No, with enough hard work and with the right people, Newcastle has the stature and the stadium, the fan base. To be there every single season, and he's right. And yeah, those Champions League nights were extraordinary. At that point, no other team had done what Newcastle did, which was to lose their first three games and then still qualify from the first group stage. That I was at the final, I was at all of those games, I think, or most of them. I was at final. Never, you know, my God, what a night that was, that Newcastle qualified from that. Felt like a kind of cup final in itself. And then, you know, Going to Barcelona, okay, that didn't, you know, the result wasn't great, but going to the San Siro, taking the lead twice in the San Siro, what was it, 10,000, 12,000 Newcastle fans that night making that noise? It felt like that's where Newcastle should be. It felt like Newcastle belonged there. And I think he gave that feeling to us. Now, you know, he then goes. And I think, you know, that's another part of it, actually. And it's another thing that Sciola and Steve Harper say, that it's the decline that happened after that and the fact that Newcastle have not been in the Champions League since then that sort of tells a story about what Bobby did and how he got everybody together and how he coalesced the club. I mean, it's 20 years since Newcastle have been in the Champions League, and that was Sir Bobby's time.
Yeah, and one really quick point, touched on this earlier, but Newcastle's owners at the time gave certainly Ruud Gullit a lot of money.
Yeah.
They gave Graham Souness a fortune. But Bobby Robson, the one man who you wanted to back in the transfer market, comparatively and across his tenure, spent very little money on building that team. And again, to bring it back to modern day, it's a little bit Eddie Howe-esque, isn't it? Because Andy O'Brien wasn't a Champions League footballer.
No. Yeah.
Neither was Nikos Dabizas. Neither was Aaron Hughes. Neither were a host of players. Throw in Shea Given. There were lots of them who didn't really ever hit those heights the rest of their career, but didn't look out of place playing in that side, at that level, in that competition. And that's down to his ability to improve footballers.
Having one pitch at Chesley Street when he got there, you know, having no offices, no administrative office, he didn't have his own office, and saying to the chairman, this is appalling, you know, you've got to do something. So he started that point in his life at the age of 66, he started building something again. And again, that's part of the stuff that I think gets played down. Newcastle had to finish 11th twice, and it was a struggle. Who was his first signing? Kevin Gallagher, maybe half a million. He was told there was nothing, and he says, you know, the chairman said, "Well, there's no money." Okay, well, I need a bit of time then, because that's what it takes. He was always that proponent of time on the grass. That was one of his lovely phrases. But it was just all about work. It was about work, starting all over again, and building and persuading them to invest in a training ground, to start doing things properly. There was no academy building, as he says, and that's what he was about. But, you know, it was based on hard work and then getting the most out of people.
My father knew that I actually became manager of Newcastle United. He would not believe it. He'd have been so proud. He would have somersaulted all the way to the games. he really would.
It's astonishingly resilient as well, isn't it? It's hard work and getting the most out of people. But, God, faced with that, most people would be like, you know what, fuck this. I'm out. Like, if there's one pitch here, I don't have an office. You're giving me no money. Like, what do you expect me to do? A lot of managers, like, dare I say, most managers would be like, nah, I'm walking.
But we also forget about England. You know, we have that kind of very sort of soppy memory about how England ended in 1990 with Gazza and the tears and the penalties and Bobby looking so sort of dignified, and how that kind of carried through to all of us. But Bobby, you know, I remember those times. Bobby was at the centre of the most vicious circulation war, newspaper circulation war, in history. The tabloid press in particular was not only brutal but disgusting. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. And he was right at the epicentre of that. Now, we've seen so often how people have been finished off by the England job, and it's been tame compared to how it was back then. But he managed to get out of that. He managed to get out of that and didn't just stop. That's actually when he went abroad and then, you know, did all this incredible other things. He did have this resilience. He was so badly affected by leaving Newcastle. It hurt him so much. It was like having his heart ripped out. But he didn't let that fester inside him. And he had that quality that he could always bounce back. And he had this amazing curiosity and inquisitiveness that I think, you know, powered him through life. There was always something else to discover. There was always something else to do. And that was a kind of magical quality I think he had, because I think most of us, as you say, would just be beaten down by it.
And I think that's what is, you know, to sort of come to towards the end of the show, I think that is typified maybe most of all by the foundation, isn't it? By being hit with the worst news possible, and then turning that into one of the most inspiring things you could possibly do, something that creating this legacy that is saving lives, that is doing research, that is, you can't overstate the importance of the work that's being done by the Bobby Robson Foundation. And it wasn't, you know, a lot of charities, not to denigrate any other charity, a lot of charities are set up by somebody who's affected by somebody near them. This is him suffering. This is him, you know, losing the battle, if you want to use that kind of parlance, and still deciding, I'm going to make something of this. That's astonishing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was his oncologist that asked him to, you know, if he knew people or if he knew how to kind of raise money, the original £500,000. You know, so it was while he was getting treatment that he was asked about it, and yeah, threw himself into it like he did with everything. I mean, it's a cliche now, this, you know, what he said, but it's true, and it completely sums it up. He would say to Lady Elsie, I've never been ill for a day in my life. And she would say to him, Bobby, you've had cancer 5 times. Yeah. And he would say, oh, yeah, I suppose I have, yeah.
Yeah, oh, when you put it like that.
When you put it like that, yeah, well, yeah, I have, yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
But that sort of, that stayed with him. And no, the foundation is doing, you know, absolutely incredible work, still is. And this project, the whole Bobby 90 thing, what you've done and kind of what everybody else has done, is that lovely reminder that just people don't say no to him. People still say yes to him. People who weren't alive, you know, when he was Newcastle manager, know who he is and want to be part of things. Everyone says yes to him. It's very powerful. And that, you know, that ultimately is his towering legacy, I think.
Absolutely. And I, you know, feel incredibly privileged. And I know that, well, I don't want to speak for you, Alex, but I'm pretty sure you do, to be part of this project. I will plug the fanzine one last time as we round out the show. Thank you, George and Alex, for joining me this evening to talk through just the most spectacular person. The fanzine will be available as you're listening. The link will be in the description to this show. All proceeds will go to the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation, and I will evidence that on Twitter. I will make, you know, and wherever I can, I will make sure that everybody's aware once we've sold out that we will make that donation. So thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to you two, and take care.